From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations and comments featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. One chief social concern shared by Americans today is the question of medical care. For example, the portion of the gross national product occupied by medical expenses in America increased from 4% in 1950 to 12% by the mid-1980s. How has this situation evolved? Soundings now presents the first of two discussions about medicine and the hospital in history. The panelists are Donald Madison, Timothy Miller, and Michael McVaugh. Don Madison is a professor of social and administrative medicine at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Tim Miller and Michael McVaugh are professors of medical history. Tim Miller at Salisbury State College in Maryland, Michael McVaugh at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Tim Miller recently completed a fellowship year at the National Humanities Center, where his research project was entitled The Birth of the Hospital in Medieval Byzantium. Here is Don Madison.
In looking at the origins of the modern hospital, I don't know whether one can pin down exactly a point of origin. Rather, I think that there have been a series of major changes over the course of a long evolution. One of the most important changes, perhaps the most important change in terms of what we think of a hospital today, occurred during the 19th century, particularly the last half of the 19th century, when a number of things happened. First of all, hospitals had, at least in the United States, and I think in Great Britain as well, stemmed from almshouses. One of the main social reform movements of the early to mid-19th century in the United States was to differentiate and to begin to sort out those patients and put orphans in orphanages, blind people in homes for the blind, and so on, leaving hospitals for the care of the sick. Another main change that happened in the 19th century, the latter half, was the birth of professional nursing. Florence Nightingale, having established certain principles for someone she called a professional nurse, and having established the first professional nursing school in St. Thomas Hospital in London, spread that notion to the United States, and in the 1870s, there was a major change in that professional nurses began to take over the work that in the old almshouse had been done by patients who were able to do it. Another thing that happened was that doctors, for reasons other than teaching students and empirical research, began to use hospitals. They began to use hospitals curatively in ways that they hadn't done very much up until that point. This was made possible by the growth of, by the birth of microbiology, by anesthesia, and by antisepsis. So surgery became relatively safe.
How does the rise of the hospital, in very broad strokes, fit into the development of medicine as a profession?
In the United States, physicians began to understand that the hospital was a convenient place to practice. They begin to understand this after the growth of urbanization, after the and the consequent mobility of the population, and the growth of inexpensive means of transportation. Mobility meant that, first of all, that there were fewer households with a lot of family members that could take care and provide nursing care for the people when they were sick. The decline of family support was a major reason for the growth of the hospital. And transportation meant that both the patients could now come to the hospital more cheaply, and that they were more concentrated around urban centers where hospitals were, and that the doctor could travel there less expensively as well.
Well, let's talk historically. Where does the modern hospital begin? Let's assume that we use that definition and take it all the way back to, what did you say, the 4th or the 5th century?
Late 4th, beginning of the 5th.
Where does this occur?
Interesting enough, one of the things I've come up with in my research, it seems as though the Arians, Christians of the 4th century, first developed hospitals. The first one, however, later when the Orthodox Church sort of defined these people out of Christianity, or at least the main line of Christianity, their contributions have been obscured. But the first clear character or historical character we know of is St. Basil, who established in his city of Caesarea in Central Asia Minor an institution of that looks like a hospital. We'll say he certainly set up a monastery, and the monks had to, as part of their Christian life, perform certain social services for the city. And he mentions that in one of these institutions, he hired physicians and had nurses to take care of patients. Then he goes on to say he also had a place for the passerby to spend the night and so forth. But it looks to me, at least I interpret that to be at least one section of a philanthropic agency that specialized in the care of the sick and hired physicians.
The first stage is in the Western hospitals, when you get a revival of life in Europe in, let's say, the 11th, perhaps the 12th century. It's not clear to me that these first hospitals, and they'd use the term hospitia or something like that, it's not clear to me that these first hospitals really can be understood to separate medical care simply from charitable maintenance, that they're not, these don't perform the functions of hostels and nursing homes, asyla, poorhouses, it's all rolled into one. And it occurred to me when Tim was saying that the Eastern Hospital, St. Basil's Hospital, speaking of it as a hospital, and yet apparently in St. Basil's case, again, here too, there is this confusion of purposes, whether it's really for medical care or simply for care and maintenance, seems to me to be maybe in the sense it is the Eastern Hospital's at their inception are comparable to the Western hospitals.
But what can be said is by the 6th century things have changed, and we know that there's a specific institution that deals only with the sick. There's an example of a man in the late 6th, early 7th century who is a deacon at Hagia Sophia, the cathedral church in Constantinople, and a man presumably of some wealth. I mean, he's not rich, but he has an income. He has a family. It mentions his folks at home who are concerned about him being in a bad way, and they take him to the Samson Hospital, and there he has an operation where he stays until he recovers and then is released. So that looks to me as though it's a hospital. It's not a place for maintenance or a place where old people would stay either. It's specifically to heal the patient. Mm-hmm. Now, the first example of physicians being used in the hospital setting come from the Christian period, after the Christianization of some urban areas. I want to be careful. That's in dispute now. In the 4th century AD, the Eastern Mediterranean was becoming increasingly more Christian, but there were still certain pagan towns where there were a majority of the population was still pagan. But as the Christian church became more and more powerful, one of the institutions it began to develop was this hospital. And early on in the Greek East, in fact, I was surprised as I listened to Don Madison talk, early on in the Greek East, these hospitals became separated themselves out. Just what a lot of the things Don Madison said about 19th century American hospitals would apply to what was happening 1,500 years earlier in the large towns of the Greek East, in Mediterranean East. And that brings up the point of the physicians were very, very central to this. And we know in the 6th century, this is what made me think of it, in the 6th century when some physicians, Greek physicians, were taken prisoner by the Persians, they asked the Persian king if they could set up a hospital. There was something about by the 6th century, the medical profession felt the hospital was a better way of treating disease. Now, why that is, I don't know. I've looked at all the possible sources that I could find. And is it that the population was more concentrated? That's one possibility. Were there certain technical advantages that we're not aware of? You know, most of this stuff in the 6th century was pretty primitive. A knife and a cauterizing iron and some methods very primitive of washing the wound after the physician would stitch it up and so forth, if it were surgery. I don't know really why they felt the hospital was better, but we have this example of the deacon who chose to go there. There was something that could be done in the hospital that could not be done at home. And this is from the 6th century A.D.
I want to come back to the question that Wayne Pond asked about professionalization in the hospital, because it seems to me it ought to be stressed that the formation of the professional physician, as at least in the West it has been, the career has been established since the 14th century, has been that a medical student gets some sort of scientific education, leaving aside the question of what the content of medical science is and how it's changed in those 600 years. But today we assume that an important part of the professional training of the medical student takes place in the hospital. And in this sense, now, of course, it's linked, therefore, to the hospital. But that is a recent departure. In the 16th century, you get the first systematic use by one professor, who tries to take his students through the wards of a hospital to tell them about illness, disease in individual patients. And apparently it's not a procedure that all students appreciated, because nor that other teachers tried to follow, because it meant more work for everybody. You see very, very limited hospital bedside teaching, clinical instruction, until you come down really to France at the beginning of the 19th century. And if I were going to expand on what Don Madison was talking about, it seems to me that many of the tendencies in the modern nature of the modern hospital start in Paris about 1800, where of course you have an urban center of importance, a large population. It's in Paris at the beginning of the 19th century that you begin to see some sort of rationalization of hospital organization, so that for the first time the notion of interns and externs, for example, goes back to the Paris hospitals of 1800 or so, the new revolutionary, the hospitals set up, reorganized under the French Revolution. This clinical instruction as part of professional education can only really be advantageous in a hospital where you have a number of patients with a wide variety of diseases to be observed and to be studied. And I think this is one other it's soon realized that there are real advantages from the standpoint of education and professional instruction in the establishment of hospitals in now this modern sense.
Well, that might be another thing to take into consideration as to why these 6th century physicians wanted to have a hospital when they went to Persia. But we know that the Arab hospitals were teaching hospitals, and that they grew out of a 6th century Christian hospital in Persia, Gundishapur. And Gundishapur had a teaching faculty of medicine. It was that Christian hospital from the Byzantine Empire which then stimulated the Arab medicine of later centuries. So I believe that these hospitals in the 6th century were in fact teaching hospitals.
But do you think that in order to become a recognized physician in Byzantium, that you have to have clinical training, clinical experience, before you can begin to practice. That it's a necessary ingredient, because certainly in the West, later on, when the medical schools become established in, say, the 13th and 14th century, the early curricula of some medical schools make provision for students in the summer term to have some, to apprentice themselves, in effect, to a physician. But it's not, I would say, seen as an essential part of what it is, of the process that makes you a physician, that eventually will give you a license to practice and so forth. All you need really to do is to go to the lectures. And of course, that continues, that this is something that in the West is the rule until really quite late in the 19th century. There are plenty of stories about 19th century, in 19th century American medical schools, to be a physician, to get your degree and subsequently your license, what you would do is listen to a course of lectures for 2 years, and you listen to the same course of lectures each year for 2 years, and you'd never have any clinical experience at all. Now, you wouldn't even see a cadaver. You wouldn't do any dissection.
Well, see, in the 12th century, the same time as this one hospital I mentioned was functioning, we have a reference by the patriarch to what the necessary steps to become a physician. And the first step is the study of the text, the hearing of the lectures on Galen and so forth. The second step is experience. The third step is a test. And then the fourth step is a ceremony granting the degree or the what we would call a license. And interestingly enough, this is part of my argument in the book, one of the doctors, or two of the doctors actually, at the hospital are given a title which is the same as a master of a guild. And I assume that, at least in Constantinople, it's one of my arguments, that the physician had to become a physician, you had to be granted the license by this leading physician in the hospital. Now, there's not any clear evidence of that. I do it on analogy with other guilds and so forth. And that, in fact, if my case is correct, then the practical experience gained in the hospital was a necessary step to becoming a physician.
From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings. You're listening to the first of two discussions about medicine and the hospital in history. The panelists are Donald Madison, Timothy Miller, and Michael McVaugh. Don Madison teaches in the medical school at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where he is a professor of social and administrative medicine. Tim Miller and Michael McVaugh specialize in medical history. Michael McVaugh at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Tim Miller at Salisbury State College in Maryland. Tim Miller recently completed a fellowship at the National Humanities Center, where he worked on a forthcoming book entitled The Birth of the Hospital in Medieval Byzantium. Here is Don Madison.
When did the differentiation of medical sects first occur into a hierarchy, which only began, as I understand it, to become closed after the French Revolution?
What's the origin of this differentiation?
Well, was there ever in ancient times one category of medical person?
I think that when you begin to get professionalization and an emphasis on licensing procedures, you find, and this is in the West in the 14th century, you find a sense that there are different categories of specialized knowledge. There is the specialized manual knowledge that the surgeon has. There's the specialized intellectual knowledge that the physician has. And it's at this point that you begin to see an insistence upon prerogative, upon the rights to certain types of practice. But it's interesting that before this, before, let's say, the middle of the 14th century, although you would speak of someone as a physician or as a surgeon, nevertheless, they wouldn't simply exercise a narrow range of functions. You'd find someone who is a surgeon in town asked to function as a physician. There's no sense that these barriers can't be crossed, which is really what you're asking. It's professionalization, I think, that starts the barriers, sets the barriers up. As time goes on, you get signs of regulations, and you get wardens, perhaps, of hospitals, certainly an administrator, but because the function of the hospital is so confused, and there's still a question of ministering to the sick and to the homeless at the same time, the regulations which the warden has to administer are regulations which really govern the behavior of the patient. You know, you have to be in by such and such an hour. How much food can you eat? Can you consume? How noisy can or can't you be? How much fraternizing can there be? This is what hospital administration amounts to. And I suspect that this, rather than the Eastern example, tends to be the norm for hospital administration down until, well, again, down until the middle of the 19th century, as long as they continue to combine these functions, as Don Madison pointed out they did, as long as they are in part almshouses, run on charitable purposes as a way to provide a place for people to go, the administration is concerned in large part, at least, with governing the behavior of the inhabitants. I should think that programs and Don, when in fact do programs in hospital administration begin? That certainly is very recent.
You mean training programs? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure about that. I think that it's important to differentiate sponsorship, which has always been important in hospitals, from administration. Sponsorship for a reason, be it moral, charitable, whatever. In the United States, the first modern hospitals were what's called voluntary hospitals. Voluntary, the term voluntary means financed by the voluntary contributions of those that wish to and are willing to contribute, as opposed to taxation. They began very early. I believe the first one was the I don't know what the first one was in the United States, but they were the first wave of hospitals, and they were administered not by professionals, but essentially by their trustees, who were the elite citizens of mostly the northeastern cities in the United States, and who were also the main contributors to their beginnings and to their ongoing maintenance. They didn't collect fees. Every care was free in hospitals, essentially, until the latter part of the 19th century. Trustees really did administer. Not only did they administer, they had prerogatives that only physicians have now. They could admit patients. And it was really only at the very end of the 19th century in the United States, when the last charter of a voluntary hospital allowing its trustees the privilege of admitting patients was changed. After that, fees began to be important. And it was only as differentiation of personnel, the introduction of nursing and other people who were paid, and the collection of fees occurred that professional hospital administrators became necessary, because it was only with these things that that the bureaucracy became complex enough to warrant a professional administrator. It's important to note, though, that in the United States, as opposed to most of Western Europe, physicians who are out in the community and who have their practices out in the community, but who use the hospital for an important part of their work, have a dual line of authority over what goes on in the hospital. This is not true in Europe, where the physicians who work in hospitals are a different group of physicians than those who practice out in the community.
You know, it's interesting, as Don was talking about the modern hospital, I think there's the reason I'm so strong on pushing the study of these Byzantine hospitals is I think they may, not directly, but they may shed some light on our present problems with hospital care in the United States. One thing, of course, about Byzantine hospitals, and in a sense we can say Christian hospitals, when they were first founded and as they developed in the Christian East, the Byzantine Empire, through the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th centuries, up that far, they were free. They provided free care for the indigent, and there was no question of collecting any fees.
This is what people today would call socialized medicine?
I don't want to use, let's just call it Christian philanthropic medicine. It keeps it safer. But in fact, what you were, I suppose you could define it as socialized medicine, in that the emperor, that is the state, took an interest in seeing that the church maintained these hospitals.
Well, whether the impulse comes from the church or the state,
in the case of the,
was cost-free medical care.
Right, and it was administered always in a Christian context. In fact, I've got good evidence, indisputable evidence, that in fact the hospital was decorated with mosaics or frescoes that would be of the saints and of the Virgin and of Christ himself. But one thing, Michael may have something to add on the West in this matter.
Oh, I was just going to say that, but bear in mind, I don't stretch the parallel too far, because if this is right, it's still only for hospitals, and there are plenty of ways, I take it, in which you could get medical care on a fee-for-service basis with individual physicians.
That must have been the case. I want to add one thing. The way the hospital seemed to be able to provide free medical care was that the salary of the physician for his time spent in the hospital was very low. I haven't yet been able to figure this out, and I haven't gotten out my calculator to figure out, granted Byzantine currency and so forth, how much it was. But I know it was low, not much above a day, a manual laborer's fee just for carrying things around the harbor, for example. The physician was paid a very low salary for his time in the hospital. Now, we also know from the regulations that the physician only spent half his time in the hospital. He worked 6 months in the hospital on an every other month basis, and then the remaining 6 months were free, presumably for private practice, and that's where he made his money. So there was private practice, and that would include the very wealthy and some of the middle class. But what would the advantage have been for the physician to have spent these 6 months in the hospital? That's the question that I think you may, Don may have answered the question, in that it was a status thing. The best physicians were the hospital physicians. They were the ones that were considered the leaders of the field.
Well, in the United States, up until the turn of the century, the physicians who had appointments in the hospital were not paid either in money. They were paid in terms of prestige and also the ability to observe things that couldn't be seen out of the hospital.
That's right. I think that plays a role, too. It's interesting that sort of trade-off, that at the same time the profession was linked to the hospital, it also upped the prestige of the profession in general. Physicians were very highly respected in the Byzantine Empire as a result of their philanthropic service. They are frequently used as the example of Christ's love for man, the physician and his daily care. In fact, the example I gave from this 5th century, late 4th century source of Christ looking at the soul and deciding what way grace should move the soul and so forth, was the example was used of the physician examining the patient in the hospital and figuring out what needed to be done.
From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings. You've been listening to the first of two discussions about medicine and the hospital in history. The panelists were Timothy Miller of Salisbury State College and Michael McVaugh and Donald Madison of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Next week on Soundings, part two of Medicine and the Hospital in History. Soundings would like to hear from you. Send your comments to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Soundings is made possible by grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities.